Hey guys, you are listening to the Fans of Wrestling show here on the FOW Radio Network. I am Patrick. With me, Danny Danger. It's boys only tonight. How you doing, my brother?
I am doing great. We had a lot of big wrestling this past weekend, and already some news, even though the week's only halfway done. Sink our teeth into stuff and get to talking about it.
Well, let's get to it. And we're going to go slightly chronologically here. We're going to talk first about Saturday night and NXT TakeOver Phoenix. As this was our first time doing a TakeOver in Phoenix. And, man, we got, as we talked about last week, five solid matches. Again, a great formula for NXT. And let's kick it off with the opening match. The NXT Tag Team Championships. Almost 17 minutes. War Raiders defeat the Undisputed Era to become NXT Champions. And now the War Raiders, formerly known as War Machine, have made history. As they tweeted out today, I believe, they are the only tag team to ever hold the IWGP Heavyweight Championships, the ROH Championships, and the NXT Tag Team Championships.
It's quite an accomplishment. I mean, part of that is, in this day and age, tag teams don't always stay together for a long time. You know, like they break apart, they become single stars, they kind of do a little singles, do a little tag. But these guys, pretty much since they formed, you know, War Machine at the time, took it as a tag team around the world, you know, going to Japan, touring the U.S. with Ring of Honor, and now, you know, with NXT. I really enjoyed the match. It was a heck of a contest. You saw a lot of great things. As tag team matches nowadays tend to do, it kind of broke into tornado rules more times than not. But the action, even for a 17-minute match, the action was very, very fast-paced throughout. I'm interested to see where the NXT tag division goes now with the War Raiders on top.
Do want to make sure though, I make a little correction, because I don't want to get War Raiders upset with us, and come hunt us down. But Undisputed Era's O'Reilly and Fish, known mostly as Red Dragon and Independence, they also held ROH tag team titles, NXT titles, and the IWGP tag team championships. Although it was the junior heavyweight championship.
It was the IWGP. So that's where War Raiders was specific, you know. But yeah, because I thought of that too. I was thinking, well, Red Dragon did the same thing. No, it was they were the IWGP junior heavyweight tag division, whereas War Raiders, of course, are the heavyweight division, nowhere near. They haven't been a juniors probably since they were in middle school. They are monstrous men. They weren't specific in the tweet. They just said IWGP Tag Champions, which I mean, technically they just call it the IWGP Tag Team Championship. They don't specify that it is the heavyweight tag team championships. They specify for the junior tag team championships. But otherwise, it's the IWGP Tag Team Championships.
But, I mean, in all honesty, same titles, just different division?
Well, I mean, that's the same as saying that the WWE title and the Cruiserweight title are the same thing, okay? They're not. They are different championships. It is a different physical belt. There's a different physical belt for each division.
Yes, but we just don't want to, you know, for anyone listening, we don't want anyone to get mad online by if we don't acknowledge at least that Red Dragon sort of did this in a slightly different way.
Yeah. And I'm huge Red Dragon fan. I love Red Dragon. I'm kind of, you know, I understand the need to switch the tag team of Undisputed Era to Roderick, and Roderick and Kyle are a great team, but I still do love Red Dragon. I loved all the stuff they did. Huge Red Dragon fan.
Well, I think it was also a consequence of Bobby Fish's injury that caused this whole exchange. So,
yeah, and that's what I'm saying. I understand by it. So now that now that they have the tag belts are gone, you know, from them, maybe they go back to Red Dragon, maybe they change up the tag team, because they did just say that, you know, Undisputed Era talking about 2019 was going to be the year that they all wore gold. You know, at the time when they talked about this, they assumed that that Strong and O'Reilly would hold on to the tag belt, so then Fish would be going after a singles title. But that's, you know, doesn't necessarily have to be the case now that they don't have the tag belts.
Yeah, I mean, I want to see O'Reilly and Fish continue a tag team run in NXT and in on the main roster, WWE, of course. Huge history with the two of them, Red Dragon, as we've been talking about. We're both big fans. And it would kind of feel weird to see them in the roster in sorts of tag team, not with each other.
Well, yeah, I mean, it was kind of strange once, you know, especially once Bobby Fish came back and Roderick and Kyle were still tag team champions. Like, Bobby Fish basically just kind of became the third member and was kind of their backup, you know, swinging chairs and such.
And holding the Dusty Classic trophy.
Yeah, holding the trophy. And then at TakeOver, he came out carrying their Tag Team of the Year award. But yeah, absolutely. Would love to see them together again.
But again, great accomplishment by the War Raiders. Definitely having so much success as we all imagined they would. They're amazingly talented, especially for their size. But yeah, this match was, you know, was real good. The War Raiders and Undisputed Era, you know, the last few months they've been going at it, and you know, I think that the chemistry's always been there. They all have history with each other, so it was definitely, for it being getting as much time as it did, I really enjoyed it. Great way to open the show, and a titles change I predicted. So I if I don't remember correctly, you guys didn't think the titles were going to change hands, but yeah, War Raiders, I think the right choice now. You got plenty of heel tag teams that can go after those titles.
Yeah, I think that's one of the things. You have several teams that they could bring up or they could put together to challenge the War Raiders.
So next up, we get Matt Riddle versus Cassius Ohno, and Riddle wins by submission in over 9 minutes. Your thoughts here on this match?
I enjoyed the match. You know, I mean, Riddle now 3-0 against Cassius Ohno. You know, by the Flash knockout, then by submitting him on NXT TV. And then beating him here at TakeOver. I enjoy I'm enjoying the matches so far. But I wonder now if this is the end between it, because realistically the babyface keeps winning, so why does he need to give the heel another chance, another opportunity? So I did enjoy the match. I actually felt it was one of the better matches on the show as far as singles matches, just because one of the big things that Chris Hero's matches I love about Cassius Ohno is the pacing in his matches. He allows time between moves to breathe, to allow them to sink in. He and Riddle are great at selling you know, the effects of moves, selling how it affects them later on in the match, building to bigger and bigger moves. So that's one of the things to me that makes Cassius so great, is not just at this stage in his career, not just the execution of moves, but all the things he does in between the moves. And so he and Riddle, you know, having worked each other so many times on the Independence and Evolve and several other places, know each other very well. And so they absolutely put on a great match. Because I felt that as we go on later into the card, some of the matches, especially the North American Championship match, I felt like there was so much going on that they didn't allow anything to breathe. And so I just didn't enjoy them as much. But this one, I really did.
Yeah, and I think, you know, time, the fact that, you know, they didn't have to go a long time, you know, being the shortest match and the only one in single digits, they were able to basically do all their best and not really have to do stuff to make it, to stretch time and make it longer and kill time. So that being that, okay, they have so much time, and they had, it was plenty for them to do their best. And, you know, Matt Riddle continues to improve more and more. And of course, being with Cassius, somebody who he has history with, they work great together. And Cassius Ohno continues to show why he's one of the best wrestlers in the world. I think that overall, yeah, this should be the end of the feud. But I think it was a great way to get Riddle introduced to the WWE audience and the WWE universe, the NXT universe. I think, you know, they were going to be over with him already, especially in Florida. But being exposed to the rest of the WWE universe, you know, those, I think it was important. And I think this was a great way to do it. And Riddle continues to impress, and more people are buying into Matt Riddle. And the casual fans, those are the ones that really matter. And I think people are catching on. Matt Riddle, you know, I've always been a big fan of him. And I really enjoy how he's been brought in, because I had questions about how Matt Riddle would be taken in, because not everybody is, you know, especially somebody who's only been in the business for a few years, not sure how they're going to be taken. But he's been taken very well, and I'm not surprised. He's got a lot of charisma, and he looks like he fits and belongs there.
Yeah, yeah.
So, yeah, I love the match. It was great. And, yeah, we should move on. I know that they're doing NXT tapings this week, and they'll be getting things set, you know, on the road to WrestleMania and NXT TakeOver Brooklyn 4 or 5. I lost count of how many Brooklyn shows they've had. But, yeah, NXT is going back to Brooklyn, and exciting times. Now, after next match, Johnny Gargano defeats Ricochet to become the NXT North American Champion. This goes over 23 minutes, the second longest match of the night. You know, I really enjoyed this match for a lot of reasons. And of course, one of them being that I had Ricochet, who's one of my favorite wrestlers in the world. But I thought that this Johnny Gargano is probably been, to me, the most interesting Johnny Gargano that I've seen in the last few years. And probably the most interesting the character's been since he joined NXT. At least for me.
Yeah, I mean, I know you're a really big Ricochet fan, and I'm not really a Ricochet fan. So I didn't enjoy this match as much, just because I think too much of Ricochet's stuff is, it feels choreographed because there's so many interchanges. They don't allow things to breathe. I know some people, you know, really enjoy that, the fast pace, the, you know, twists and turns and all of his flips and stuff. But I still really can't get behind Ricochet stuff. Didn't really enjoy this match as much. Like, overall, with this takeover and even the last takeover, I just didn't really excited going into them. Like, I don't know if there's just not as, I just don't, I'm just not as invested in as many of the characters or the stories going on right now. And so this was one of those matches that, like, I just wasn't as into. You know, I mean, the crowd was going crazy for it the whole time. So people, people loved it and they were into it, but it just wasn't exactly my type of match, I guess.
Yeah, I know. The match was, you know, pretty long, but of course they were going to get a lot of time being, this was a championship match and who was in it. I definitely do think that, to your point here, as far as storylines and things are concerned, is that maybe for the last year or so, at least in my opinion, we've seen a lot of the same wrestlers being involved in most of the storylines. And because the roster, while it's a large roster, they don't have enough time to showcase everybody. You know, they only have 1 hour a week.
Yeah.
A five-match takeover, you know, four or five times a year. Whereas with the main roster, you have a total of 6 hours of TV. And every month you have a network special.
Yeah, at least one network special, yeah.
So I think that may be one thing, is like the people that get showcased the most are the same people. And I think that's something we're going to hopefully see a little bit different. It's like we'll get a lot more call-ups this time around of people of consequence. Where last year, maybe last 2 years, people got called up, but it wasn't always the top guys. You know what I mean? A couple of top guys, but not most of them. And I think most of them being on NXT have been, maybe being that they're all the same guys and women, it's something that we need to see a little bit different.
Well, when they announced, you know, I mean, they have, not all of them have even been established to one brand or another, but you know, when Vince McMahon returned and they announced the handful of call-ups, they were all kind of middle-level players in NXT. And so I think that's the problem, too, is that you have your handful of guys at the top, and then you have a lot of guys who are, you know, kind of low-card, but they pulled out a big chunk of the middle. You know, Heavy Machinery, EC3, Nikki Cross, Lacey Evans, Lars Sullivan were all kind of mid-card guys. I think maybe that's part of the problem too, is they didn't really have people ready to jump up to that next level yet. So they just shuffled stuff around, but it's still kind of the same. Yeah. Five or six people kind of at the top, which hopefully we do see changes of, you know, in the next few months.
Yeah. I definitely do hope so. I mean, there's so much talent that continues to get signed by WWE. There's so much talent. And I mean, just, you know, of course, some of my favorites, right? You look at Riddle, you look at Lee, and you look at Dijakovic, as I like to call him. I know they pronounce the name.
Dijakovic, yeah.
I'm not going to call it that.
Take out the itch is, I think, what they said. Remove the itch.
I think that they can do more with those guys, but I think you got to move some guys up. And I mean, you think about how long Gargano and Ciampa have been on NXT. At this point, they got to be the longest tenured members of the NXT roster.
At least ones that have been on TV consistently. Because there's probably been people that have been there at the Performance Center longer. You know, I mean, like somebody like Aaliyah comes to mind, who's been there seemingly forever. But she hasn't been high profile on TV the whole time. But yeah, I would definitely think that the Ciampa and Gargano are some of the two longer tenured guys.
And I think between injuries and whatnot, they've been kind of hot and cold. And I think that right now, while the iron's hot, they need to make some changes. And maybe WrestleMania weekend will be that, when they do the transitioning. But you got to do it now while they're super over with the crowds and, you know, people care, because then they'll continue to watch them in the main roster.
Yeah, true.
So, okay, next match, Shayna Baszler defeats Bianca Belair by technical submission, as Bianca Belair passed out, to retain the NXT Women's Championship. 15 minutes, 26 seconds here. Pretty impressed with Bianca Belair. This is probably the first time that I cared about the EST of NXT. I still don't get that, but that's okay. I'm probably going to never get it.
Well, it's It's the EST, of course, you know, being fast, est, strong, est, you know, whatever. So I think that's what the EST is, you know, best, whatever. But I mean, Shayna Baszler to me is easily one of the best in the world right now. She's just firing on all cylinders, just so fantastic at what she does. She's carrying that division, and rightfully so. Bianca, I like her, but she still has a lot of work to go. I mean, she's been at the Performance Center for a couple of years, but realistically has only been on television for less than a year. You know, this was her highest profile match to date, you know, probably her longest, you know, either this or the four-way she had a few weeks ago are probably the longest matches that she's had on television. So she's still got a lot of ways to go, I think, but the charisma's there, you know, with this match helped her a lot. I think she was, once the match ended, I think she was a lot more over than she was even going in. And so I think that she has the possibility to be something big for them, but there's still time and refinement that needs to be done with her. But yeah, I mean, her athleticism and stuff is outstanding. It really is. The power she has, and she's able to do, you know, flips and cartwheels as well. And that the charisma is kind of there. It's just putting some of the smaller intricacies of the ring work together, the character work.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I can see many people calling her the total package here because she has it all. Like you said, charisma, athleticism. She's over with the fans. The fans love her.
Just refinement and seasoning, I think, is all she really needs, yeah.
And that's what NXT and the Performance Center really is for. You know, as much as I'm sure that Triple H wants to make it a brand equal to Raw and SmackDown, at the end of the day, he needs to realize this is a developmental brand. This is to develop people and to get them ready for the main roster and then for Vince to play with when they get called up. So I and not only that, you look at not only Bianca, but you look at the rest of the women's roster in NXT. That's a stacked roster.
It is. But there's almost like not enough room for everybody. So, you know, like at this point, because it's, yeah, I mean, there are a lot of great talent, and, you know, there's talent in the wings that have, you know, waiting to get opportunities on TV. And then there's, you know, talent who is injured, who is, you know, waiting to come back from injury. I mean, but it's a strong roster, but it's also not a lot of them have had time on television to develop characters and personas. You know, you look at, I mean, you can look at several, you know, Deonna Purrazzo, and she's one of the first ones to come to mind, but they really haven't used her a lot on TV to develop a persona.
Yeah, and of course, Mia Yim, you got Chelsea Green.
Yeah, Chelsea Green waiting in the wings. Candice, LeRae, you know, who's kind of been used on TV off and on. You know, she's hopefully will get more time as a wrestler rather than just coming out in Johnny's storylines. But yeah, Io and Kairi. Yeah, it's just a lot of depth. And like we talked with them only having 1 hour of TV a week, it's kind of hard to get time to showcase everybody.
The great thing about Shayna is that, as you mentioned, she's one of the best. And can you believe it? She's only been in this business for like 3 or 4 years.
Yeah. She picked up on it very well. And then I think her time in the Performance Center prior to debuting on TV, I think, really helped to sharpen the edges on her. But some people just pick up to it naturally. And, you know, she works well making it a transition from MMA to professional wrestling.
Yeah, and you know what? That's a subject that I kind of want to delve in a little bit more after we cover these two shows, because there's a lot. You know, not only a transition from UFC, from MMA to pro wrestling, but vice versa. it's something that's really been interesting me, been on my mind for a while. So let's I want to delve into that a little bit later. But yeah, what I like about Shayna being on NXT and being the champ right now, and with the stacked roster that they have, is that most of the roster is full of potential baby faces.
Yes. Yeah, potential baby face challenges for heel Shayna. Yeah.
So Shayna can basically run programs through the rest of the year with the women on NXT. And there's no rush to move her back up to the main roster. There's no rush to do that.
I mean, if they are going to do the four horsewomen versus four horsewomen thing, they can bring her up for that, but keep her in NXT still, you know, like, I don't, if they want to, but I mean, with the way, you know, it seems they're going with singles match at Mania, then they'll save the four horsemen versus four horsemen for another time, for later down the road.
Yeah, that's a perfect Survivor Series match, in my opinion, or SummerSlam, but you can definitely save it. Oh, you can even save it for next year's WrestleMania. You got so much time. But yeah, but this match definitely, I think, continues to show the greatness that Baszler, you know, has. And I think this was basically really Belair's coming out party. As you said, you know, the biggest, the highest profile match that she's been in. And she definitely showed that she belonged. Even impressed me, and you know, it's kind of hard. Some not that it matters, right? But for me to really be invested in somebody, it takes a lot. So yeah, so we move on to our main event of the evening, 26 plus minutes, and Tommaso Ciampa defeats Aleister Black to retain the NXT Championship.
No, I will say this. I've watched this match a couple times now. I've watched I've watched TakeOver a couple times, and I still really didn't just get into it as much. But this match, especially, like, I really like Aleister Black. I really like Tommaso Ciampa. But I just couldn't get into the match. It felt structured very, very similarly to the Ricochet versus Johnny Gargano match. And I think that may have been done intentionally, because, you know, especially with the way the show ended with Johnny and Tommaso standing there side by side, raising their championships, you know, and then the video that would surface of the brawl afterwards, and the setup of halftime heat where they'll be on the same team again. It's not a bad match by any means, but it just didn't draw me in. You know, I mean, I don't know if something else, you know, something else in the card kind of played to that or hurt it or what, but I just found myself not being really drawn into the match.
I can see where you're coming from. I kind of felt the same way. I thought the match was good, but I wasn't really as invested. I love both guys as well. I think at this point, Aleister Black serves no purpose being on NXT. He needs to be moved up right away. He is as main roster ready as he'll ever be. And he's such a different type of wrestler. And he's so unique that he'll do great on NXT. I mean, he'll do great on the main roster. And I think here he was just there to kind of put an end to a story and try to get his championship back. But at the end of the day, the story comes back to Gargano and Ciampa. And, you know, the match was fine, but not a lot for me to be invested in, because I was just waiting for the end to see what would happen and what role would Gargano play in the match.
Yeah, see if Gargano would come and help him win or what have you, yeah.
So we saw the end. Man, what an end. Gargano and Ciampa.
Yeah, standing side by side. Yeah, as singles champions together now. You know, as opposed to when they were tag team champions together. But then after the show went off the air, the brawl erupted, you know, with so many others to set up the halftime heat.
Yeah, so we get Velveteen Dream trying to pick a fight with the former DIY. Then out comes Adam Cole, baby. And then, you know, Aleister Black hobbles to the up the ramp. He was looks like he had a minor knee injury, but he should be fine. Otherwise, they wouldn't book him in a match so soon. And Ricochet, of course, who had just lost his title. So, yeah, they're gonna have a 6-man tag match at halftime heat. It's back during the halftime of a show.
The Sports Bowl Championship, yeah.
This Sunday. So, yeah, there's nothing better to do during the halftime of that foosball show.
Yeah.
Halftime Heat is going to be airing on NXT Network, Facebook, Twitter, Periscope, YouTube.
Yeah, anywhere and everywhere.
Any type of medium that streams live video. And it's going to be, I believe, filmed live at the Performance Center.
So will there be a crowd there? Is it like empty arena style, like the original Halftime Heat with The Rock and Mankind?
You know, as much as I know, if anything, they might have some, you know, people in the back cheering for sound effects. I'm interested to see what happens. I mean, it's definitely going to be a different feel. It's not like they're going to be able to fight all over an empty arena like Rock and Mankind did.
Yeah. When you have six guys, it's pretty much going to stay in the ring and a ringside area, I would assume.
And the Performance Center is not as huge as an arena, so.
Well, that's true, yeah. And they did go all over the arena, up the steps and around the back, and he pinned him utilizing the help of a forklift and, you know, like, yeah.
Now, what's interesting is that the Performance Center does have multiple rings. So while they could wrestle in one ring, they could end up in another ring.
They could go around to the back in the training area, away from the stage, and bounce around in those rings. That's true.
But you know how we can find out? By watching live during the halftime show this Sunday. But yeah, so that's NXT TakeOver. What grade do you give this show?
I give it like a B. You know, because like I said, I'm not really invested in a lot of the stories and the characters currently. You know, the matches were good. I really enjoyed the tag match. I liked Riddle Ono. But the last three matches, you know, were take them or leave them.
Yeah, I'm going to go with an A-. I really enjoyed everything I watched, loved it. But I wasn't wowed. I didn't leave Saturday night on a really big high like I have in the past. And that's, you know, that's something that they do very well in doing. And I think maybe had they aired this brawl might have helped
to close out the show. Yeah, maybe so.
Are you tired of the same old pro wrestling? Then check out the amazing action on Powerslam.tv, the biggest indie pro wrestling channel in the world. Get over 4,000 hours of the best pro wrestling events from over 110 of the biggest names in the industry from over 15 countries around the globe. Get your free trial today at Powerslam.tv.
So let's move on to the next night. As the 2019 Royal Rumble, we had 10 matches, 3 on the pre-show and 7 on the main show. This was going to be a long show. And this time the men are the ones that headlined with the Royal Rumble match going last. First, let's take a look at the card. In the pre-show, Bobby Roode and Chad Gable defeated Scott Dawson and Rezar in a tag team match. Had Dawson and Rezar won, their prospective teams would have gotten future tag team championship matches. So that didn't happen. Shinsuke Nakamura defeated Rusev to win back his United States of Nakamura Championship, as he likes to call it. And Buddy Murphy defeated Akira Tozawa, Hideo Itami, and Kalisto to retain his Cruiserweight Championship. So first, the three pre-show matches. Your thoughts?
Tag match was just kind of there. It was kind of thrown together stuff, and I get they want to. I understand all the reasoning behind it, but it just didn't really do much for me. U.S. title match was all right. It set up for later. With Lana getting hurt at falling off the apron, possibly damaging her ankle, set up for later storyline in the Women's Royal Rumble. The Cruiserweight match I really like, and I've almost some of my favorite entertainment is on the Cruiserweight matches on the big shows are them having to fight to work to get the crowd to care, because most of the people aren't watching 205 Live on a regular basis to know the characters and know the stories. So the guys come out and they kind of get pops, they kind of don't. The match starts out slow. It seems that the crowd's paying attention, but they're not really getting into it. And then by the time the match goes down the stretch, the crowd is usually much more into it, and they're usually into the big victory. And so that's what they did this time. And so to me, that's a lot of fun to see happen, because I am watching 205 Live. It's my favorite WWE show. I make sure I watch it every week. And I love the characters and the stories, and the match quality is just top notch. But to see other people like start to realize, as the match develops and get into it, is really fun to me. Little surprised that Hideo Itami was the one who took the pinfall. But as we now know, there's kind of a reasoning behind that. I'll save that to touch on a little bit later after we finish talking about the show, talk about Hideo Itami. As a pre-show, it was interesting. I didn't really pay attention to all the table stuff. That's kind of boring and bland to me, but the matches were fine.
Yeah, I thought the tag match was just there. Could have done without, really. I kind of glanced at it, but wasn't really invested. Nakamura Rusev, it's got somewhat of an interest to me. Rusev, I think the last year or so has really been picking it up, been on a roll in this babyface role. But like you said, kind of changing things up a little bit now. But Nakamura winning the title, kind of weird that he lost it the next night.
That he would lose it on Tuesday. Yeah. And then Rusev would lose to R-Truth as well. It was kind of a little weird thing they did there, but.
Which brings that to, makes me think now they're going to do a tag team with Nakamura and Rusev.
Well, they're kind of teasing that, but especially with them kind of running into the Good Brothers backstage, but I don't think they need to. I think they could keep them going over the U.S. title and just kind of have it be a three-way feud, with R-Truth. And them kind of trying to one up each other and say, no, I'm going to be the one that wins it. I'm going to be the one that wins it. I don't want to see them as a tag team, because I don't think Rusev needs to go back to being heel-ish because he is so over with Happy Rusev Day and all that stuff.
Look how well it worked out for the bar. But anyways, they're doing something, and it'll be interesting to see what the outcome goes. And of course, Buddy Murphy winning the match, retaining his championship. The Cruiserweights definitely showed they belong. And more on that a little bit later. But yeah, Buddy Murphy continues to impress me every single time. Let's remember that Buddy Murphy could have easily been without a job a few years ago. And here he gets a shot at 205 Live, and Man, he looked great in that program with Cedric Alexander up to winning the championship, and then he's been on a roll.
His whole 2018 has just been outstanding. Since dropping to 205 Live, he's been outstanding.
Yeah, it's calls himself the biggest kept secret, but I don't think he can live up to the moniker anymore. I think that people finally know who Buddy Murphy is, and they're putting a little bit of respect on his name.
I think so. I think he's kind of changed the moniker to the greatest cruiserweight of all time, I think is what he's. So he's not the best kept secret because he isn't a secret because he's the champion.
So, yeah. So by far the best match on the pre-show and usually one of the best matches on any card. And, of course, these four guys also some of the best cruiserweights in the biz. Then we move on to the main card and we start with the SmackDown Women's Championship match, which kind of hinted at what was going to happen later. Asuka defeats Becky Lynch by submission to retain the SmackDown Women's Championship, 17 plus minutes. A great match. Asuka, being able to retain against the man who's probably right now the biggest women's wrestler star outside of Ronda Rousey, but without counting Ronda right now because she's a very special character. Knowing how well, I know you love Becky Lynch, and I've always liked Becky Lynch, but ever since she became the man, she's become the biggest ticket in town.
That's absolutely. I mean, just her segments, they've had her opening SmackDown several weeks in a row. We saw her just do so much. And yet again, I was surprised this match opened the show, but once we saw how it would play out later in the show, it made sense that this would open. But both women really brought it. I'm a huge Asuka fan as well. I love Asuka. They both brought it with some innovation as well as sticking it in with some wild strikes and submissions. I thought the Asuka lock in the ropes was really cool, and Becky Lynch trying to do the disarm her kind of in the corner over the turnbuckle was really cool innovation as well. Surprised that Becky Becky submitted. But like I said, once we found out how the rest of the show would play out, it made sense.
So this match definitely got had my attention this whole time. Asuka and Becky Lynch are two of the best at what they do, ready for to see what was gonna happen later because man, those rumors. Spread like wildfires, and by this match going first, pretty much solidified that. All right, next up, we had the tag team match for the SmackDown Tag Team Championships. The Bar defends against the best team in the world, I think is what they were calling themselves, Miz and Shane McMahon. And in 13 plus minutes, we get new tag team champions. Shane McMahon and The Miz defeat The Bar.
Yeah, I don't really, not exactly a huge Miz fan. I haven't really been a huge fan of he and Shane McMahon as the duo and all of their segments and their Miz TV and their backstage stuff. And I still think this is just kind of silly. They win the championships and the biggest thing to come out of that to me is Shane McMahon, who just turned 49 years old a couple weeks ago, nailed the shooting star press. Ridiculous. But this match with them winning and then the different stuff that we saw on SmackDown, where Miz's dad is oh so proud and now says he loves him. It was like, do you not remember when 9 years ago when he main evented WrestleMania, defeated John Cena. Like, you weren't really proud of him then, but now you're proud of him that he's won the tag team championship for the seventh time, and it's with his boss's son. That now's the time you're really proud of him as his dad. You know, like, it's kind of hokey. I don't really dig it. I'm not really a huge Miz fan. I get why people like him, but I don't really like him. He doesn't really do anything for me.
I mean, obviously this is leading to some type of program, maybe a match between the Shane and Miz at WrestleMania. It's going to be interesting to see how they get there, but yeah, what will exactly be what happens, I'm not sure, but this has got to be leading to something for them for WrestleMania. I was not expecting them to win the championships here, but indeed they did. And, you know, special award for the bar that they sold so well for Shane McMahon, because that's the thing. Anybody that has to wrestle Shane McMahon and actually sell as if Shane McMahon was, you know, I don't know, a Brock Lesnar.
Yeah, they definitely did their work to make Shane look good. Yeah, because he's 49 years old, and he's never been a full-time trained wrestler / fighter. But you know, they sold for him well, and they made Shane look good.
Alright, next, for the Raw Women's Championship, the baddest woman in the planet, Ronda Rousey, defeats the boss, Sasha Banks, to retain the Women's Championship here. Almost 14 minutes. I thought that the match was pretty good. Ronda Rousey again continues to show. Man, her wrestling, her selling, everything's for someone who's only been in the business for less than a year. Her first wrestling match was WrestleMania 34 in New Orleans. I was there live. Yes, she had a lot of time to prepare. But, man, you can prepare as much as you want. If you don't have it, you just don't have it. And Rousey has it. And what's, I would say, even more impressive is that she can look this good against anybody. I mean, she continues to wrestle so many different wrestlers and different styles, and she continues to impress.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, Sasha likes to wrestle a scramble type style, and that's kind of Ronda's style, so I think they did that well. You know, both working each other's arms, and you know, Ronda selling a lot of the arm later on. She couldn't really lock on the arm bar the way she wanted to because her arm was damaged. So she ended up going with the, as they called it, Piper's Pit, her kind of spinning Samoan drop type slam, you know, for the victory. And they there was a video that WWE put out with her talking about that. And one of the interviewers asking her, yes, this is your first pinfall victory in WWE, you know, what led you to that? And she kind of explained that, you know, well, you know, I started judo when I was younger, and I would, you know, using a lot of throws, and you know, then I moved on to jiu-jitsu and started founding the arm bar. And she talked about how, you know, over time people are going to get used to your prime weapon, so it always helps to have something extra in the background. So she mentioned that Sasha kept seeming to have answers for her arm bar, and then when her own arm got hurt, she went back to her previous training in judo, and, you know, using the slam to get the win. So it was an interesting way that she broke it down as well. Like, it's in a fight type style, you know, where the way she broke it down, I thought that was really cool. But that was an interesting add to the story. And again, showing that, you know, Ronda is more dangerous than just the armbar. She has more weapons and more tools in her game.
Yeah, by far, this match, I think, I would probably have to say it was close to being my favorite non-Royal Rumble match. Overall, this and the Cruiserweight Championship. But yeah, the women definitely stole the show on the show. All right, moving on. Hour 12 minutes. The 30 women Royal Rumble match. Of course, the winner will challenge either the SmackDown or Raw Women's Champion at WrestleMania 35. And, of course, Lana couldn't partake because she couldn't even make it to the ring because she was injured. So what happens? The man happens. The man comes out. She pleads her case. And she enters the Royal Rumble. And the last three people in the Rumble were the man, Charlotte Flair, Nia Jax. Nia gets eliminated. But then she attacks the man from behind. And the man and Charlotte Flair are the last two wrestlers standing. And the men eliminate Charlotte Flair. And the man wins the 30 women Royal Rumble match.
I mean, it was fantastic. It was a fantastic moment at the end, you know, with the crowd just going ballistic for Becky. I really enjoyed this Royal Rumble for a lot of the mixing and intermixing stories within it. I thought overall there was a lot of good stuff coming in. You know, you had several people from NXT. You had Rhea Ripley from NXT UK there making her appearance. I really enjoyed the Riot Squad's kind of whole gimmick in it, you know, where both Liv and Sarah Logan were eliminated by Natty. And then once Ruby came out, they came out with her and they were dragging people in the bottom ropes and pummeling them and beating them up and then tossed them in so Ruby could eliminate them. That was a really good strategy, really good story. I know Natalya was in there the longest, but I think Ember Moon deserves MVP of the match because she was in there almost as long as Natty was. But Ember Moon was also, every single time a new person would enter, was there to greet them, take some of the signature moves, bump for himself for him, look like a champ. And then she was still throughout the match hitting some of her big flashy signature spots. And as we would find out, she damaged her elbow pretty severely, will require immediate surgery, and will be out several months. So not only did she put on an amazing performance, but she basically sacrificed months of her career in order to put on this outstanding performance. But then you had the stories with, you know, the NXT girls and challenging different things. Maria made her appearance, you know, her first wrestling appearance, as I can recall, since returning to WWE with Mike, you know, Zelina Vega hiding under the ring. I thought the spot with Hornswoggle was ridiculous and I wish they had not done that. You know, try to make something kind of silly and comedy around the Women's Royal Rumble. But you know, it got the chuckles and the pop, I guess it was supposed to. I thought, you know, there were a lot of good faces in there, a lot of good stories that were mixing and intermixing in that matchup. Some people looked so good. You know, you had Naomi do her big spot to try to stay and get in. You had Casey Catanzaro do her big spot, you know, to stay in, where she fell on her back, but her feet technically didn't touch. So she found a way and she basically American Ninja Warrior'd her way back into the match, doing the headstand and then climbing up the post and flipping back into the ring. So it's just a lot of really exciting, a lot of really fun stuff in there. Kairi Sane definitely gets a special shout out for running down the exceptionally long rampway, looking through her spyglass the entire time. I thought that was kind of hilarious and awesome. But Becky Lynch winning, you know, led everybody to believe, okay, so now she's challenging Ronda. This is how we get our main event to WrestleMania.
Yeah, so many thoughts here. You know, we kind of talked about how deep the NXT women's roster was. And, you know, we saw it highlighted here with Zia Ling, Kairi Sane, Candice LeRae, Kacy Catanzaro, and Io Shirai from NXT, and Rhea Ripley from NXT UK. Six women definitely impressed the WWE Universe, all in their own ways. So it was great to see them. Of course, people can check out their WWE YouTube page and see when they were told earlier that week that they would be participating in the Royal Rumble. Their reactions were great.
Yeah, that was kind of fun. I like that. They tried to play like a joke on them, make them think they were getting called in for being in trouble for something, and then kind of share the news. Yeah, I mean, that's pretty much what it was. Yeah. Yeah. Serena Deeb is there. Matt Bloom's there. You think, oh, crap. Okay. What did I do? What am I in for? And they kind of tricked them and announced it. And they all got, seeing them all get their genuine reactions, getting excited for it, was really, really cool.
Yeah. So that was great. And, you know, man, they showed that they belong out there. And they all look great. And so with that, the whole match, some parts of SA probably dragged a little bit, but for the most part, the parts that really mattered were great. Of course, I have to mention the return of the goddess of the WWE, Alexa Bliss, finally cleared to wrestle, and she returned at the Royal Rumble. And what a blissful moment it was. A little bit of ring rust, as I'll admit there. I thought is what I saw. But still, she really looked great. She was moving great. And I'm glad to see Alexa Bliss back on the roster. And, you know, speaking of total packages, you know, she definitely is one of the top women on the main roster, and somebody who they need to continue to invest in, as you know, she said, you know, in my opinion, has carried both brands for a while there. So glad to see her finally back. But yes, the man wins the Royal Rumble, and then the next night, after Ronda Rousey defeats Bayley to retain her championship. Well, the man came around. And like she said, unlike Seth Rollins, she did not need any time to think about who she was challenging. She wanted Ronda Rousey at WrestleMania. Man, the crowd reaction. Ronda who is probably what people were wondering. It's like, to them, the only one thing mattered, and that was the man.
Yeah, she's truly doing something special right now, and it's just amazing. It's just a lot of fun to watch it unfold every single outing.
Yeah, and the fact that she got that type of reaction, and that Ronda got so many boos, it just speaks volumes on how popular the man is. And she's still supposed to be a heel, isn't she? I'm a little confused.
She's kind of the anti-hero babyface. She's kind of like Stone Cold Steve Austin.
But originally the she was basically a heel. She was supposed to be a heel. I think when she turned, and then
because Charlotte was supposed to be the babyface, and she was supposed to be the heel. But for even from the get go, nobody really wanted to boo her, because everything she was saying was characterly justified.
Yeah, I definitely think it's like once she turned it up, and they just gave her a free reign. You know, she embraced being the man, and no matter who you put in front of. Charlotte, Asuka, Ronda Rousey, John Cena. I mean, she's hitting home runs every single time she's out there. And I hate the rumors that they're talking about doing a three-way match with adding Charlotte in there.
Please don't. There's no need. the match will be good enough on its own.
I think also the rumors that, you know, that Ronda Rousey may be leaving after WrestleMania because, you know, she wants to start a family, which, no, she wants to leave and make a family. That's great on her. She still signed a contract. It does not mean she's done with WWE forever. I think that people were like, oh, she's leaving. She's gone for good.
Gone. She's quitting wrestling. No. I mean, Maria was, you know, took time off when she had her baby, you know, and then she's back on the road, you know? Yeah.
I mean, Travis Brown can be a house husband and take care of the baby.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's ridiculous that people are, you know.
Oh, she's quitting and leaving forever. Yeah. Yeah. Well, and it, yet again, these are rumors, and we've had quite a few of those over the last few weeks, you know, with her. And then we had these rumors about with Dean Ambrose, about what's going on with him, and he wants to leave and he doesn't want to resign. And yet again, rumors, they're all rumors. You know, until something actually happens, that's all it is. There's no confirmation to any of this.
Right. And she may very well take some time off. She has the right to. I mean, look, her first year in the business, she's done so much. She's worked almost a full-time schedule. She's been on all the TVs and pay-per-views, maybe a few house shows, but... I mean, this is pretty much as full-time will get, and she's putting the work. Let her take some time off. But anyways, back to this. Charlotte Flair does not, I mean, I don't understand their love of Charlotte other than the legacy thing. As a wrestler, she's still clunky to me.
Yeah, very much so.
And so I don't know. I want to see Becky and Ronda, the main event, one-on-one, the baddest woman against the man. I mean, that was the most anticipated match at Survivor Series. And we didn't get that. But I hope it's not a three-way. But regardless, the man will still be great. And, you know, the coolest thing would be if at the end of WrestleMania you close out with the man holding the championship. What a way to close out WrestleMania 35 in New York. And I tell you, the Northeast, there's a lot of Irish people there. And there's going to be a lot of Irish people at MetLife Stadium. I think that the men's section is going to be very loud. That's what I like about, not only Irish fans, but European fans. They're loud. You know, and they're, when they're excited about something and they're behind something, they're passionate. And sometimes one can feed off that. So that'll be fun to see. But yeah, the men... Wins the Royal Rumble, will be facing Ronda Rousey at WrestleMania. All right. Next up, we get the WWE Championship match. This was the longest non-Royal Rumble match at 24-plus minutes. Daniel Bryan defeats AJ Styles to retain his championship. Thanks to the help of one Eric Rowan.
Yes, perennial lost soul and cult follower Eric Rowan has now found his new cult in the teachings of Daniel Bryan, apparently.
Well, let's not forget that they were fellow Wyatt member families.
Yeah, I guess that means the Bludgeon Brothers are done. The tag team is not returning once they come back. I don't know if Harper is also injured. But I guess that means the Bludgeon Brothers are done if he's taking this new gimmick of an intellectual equal to Daniel Bryan, as they were saying in the promo on Tuesday. I mean, I guess, you know, you eventually you have a champion and he gets, you know, a big man to watch his back. You know, I mean, DiBiase had Andre and Christian had a litany of guys. And, you know, I mean, there's, you've had, I'm trying to think of some others. John Cena had guys backing him up when he was a heel, you know, bigger, stronger guys. So it's just kind of a thing that you do. And it, I, you know, that, and then him unveiling the new championship on SmackDown and all this, I think is just really, really great heel stuff because the fans want a great technical classic between Bryan and Styles. And so to have him ruin it by having somebody come in and cheat to win, basically, you know, kind of screws the fans out of the classic match they want to see. And then him bringing the new belt they don't like that looks funny. And I mean, Daniel Bryan speaking the truth, you know, he's speaking positive messages when he's speaking, you know, about over consumerism and, you know, saving the planet and equality for all of these kind of things, but he's going about it as a jerk. And so it makes him a heel, even though he's essentially fighting the good fight. He's just fighting it the wrong way. But I, his stuff, you know, it's an odd combination of stuff, but I think he's making it work.
Yeah. You know, another great match between these two, of course, Daniel Bryan, AJ Styles, having some great matches, since last year. And they continue to do so. But yeah, the way that it finished, a weird way, tells me that this is going to keep going on. At least one more pay-per-view, possibly. We know what's next for Bryan, though. At Elimination Chamber, he will be defending his WWE Championship, which is, of course, made of hemp and wood.
And a naturally fallen oak, so it was not chopped down for its use.
A very organic championship.
Yes.
The new Daniel Bryan will be defending his WWE Championship against AJ Styles, Jeff Hardy, Randy Orton, Samoa Joe, and Mustafa Ali. So that will be next at Elimination Chamber. Now, I don't want to take a lot of time away from this match. Can we talk a little bit about Mustafa Ali? As we've been talking about how great the Cruiserweights have been, let's see here. We have Mustafa Ali is probably the first Cruiserweight to be called up to the main roster, of the heavyweights. And he's been put in with the main event guys. He already has a win over the WWE champion in tag team action. And now he is going to be in what could possibly be the main event of Elimination Chamber in a WWE championship match. We're talking about a guy who a few years ago was ready to call it a career and move on.
Yeah, I mean, I loved Mustafa Ali's stuff on 205, and I've loved his stuff since coming up. He did a really good interview on Chris Jericho's podcast not too long ago where he talks about you know, coming his life and his career and just everything he stands for and believes in, and he tries to fit into his character, is outstanding to watch. And I just, yeah, love seeing him, and yeah, thrown right there into the heavyweight as a top level guy. You know, in the feud with Bryan, in the feud with Samoa Joe, and now in the Elimination Chamber, very, very happy, very, very excited to see Mustafa Ali profiled so well.
Yeah, it's great, man. I'm just so happy to see him, you know, the heart and soul of Chicago. You know, what he did in that city in his run at freelance wrestling, then getting that shot at the Cruiserweight Classic, then earning a WWE contract, 205 Live, and now being brought up, and really his match at WrestleMania 34 against Cedric Alexander, I think that was really what put him over the edge. I think that putting him in that stage with, you know, all of the WWE Universe seeing what he could do really got him over. And then ever since, he's had a great run at 205 Live, and it hasn't stopped him, you know? He's in the line of giants, but he is there with two of the best wrestlers in the world who are not huge in Bryan and Styles. And he's kept up. And, yeah, I'm so happy for Mustafa Ali and the successes he's had. And now here, he's going to be wrestling for the WWE Championship. Who thought 2-3 years ago, when I saw this man win the Freelance Championship, we go on to, you know, to be wrestling for the WWE Championship. Mind-blowing, but well-deserved. But yeah, so back to Bryan, AJ. Great match. They're going to continue. Other stuff is nowhere near over. And Bryan with Rowan is definitely something different. And who knows? Maybe Harper will join. I guess only time will tell. Next up, in 8 minutes, 40 seconds, Brock Lesnar defeats Finn Balor to retain the WWE Universal Championship. And after how long the last two matches had been, I did not expect this match to be very long, and maybe it was a little bit longer than most expected, but Brock Lesnar pretty much decimated Finn Balor, though he did take a little bit of beating from Finn Balor.
This was my favorite Brock Lesnar match in quite some time, and it was because they told the different story. Finn Balor started off by running and discharging Brock and attacking him, and then there was this, you know, the spot on the outside on the table where Brock ends up kind of eating the table, like just above his groin, like right in his lower abdomen. He eats the corner of the table a couple times. And he's selling like this lower abdomen. They're talking about his diverticulitis, and, you know, he's had lower abdomen problems his whole career, you know, like since then. And Balor even hits the coup, like continues firing back and hits the coup de grace. And then Brock, you know, rolls off into that and snaps right into the Kimura. And beats Finn Balor. Finn Balor is forced to submit. But I really liked the match. I've watched the match a couple times actually, and just really enjoyed the storytelling there. And the story, you know, that Finn Balor is an ordinary man who can do extraordinary things. And I was a little upset that Seth Rollins chose to fight Brock Lesnar. I was hoping that Seth Rollins would choose to fight Daniel Bryan, and that we would get that program so that we could continue and keep Finn Balor versus Brock Lesnar, especially with the post-match attack where Brock was pissed because he felt like Finn Balor kind of embarrassed him by damaging him that severely, that he attacked him. So I was hoping that we would get that would continue, and we would eventually get the Demon versus the Beast. But it does not appear that we will be getting that as Seth Rollins chose Brock Lesnar, and they've immediately jumped into that program. And seems Finn Balor has other fish to deal with. But I really did enjoy this match.
I did too. I think definitely Brock Lesnar wrestled very motivated. And yeah, Finn Balor looked great as well. And a little bit of a change there with the submission win. Brock Lesnar retains the Universal Championship. I don't think there was going to be any surprise there. We move on to the 30-man Royal Rumble match. 57 plus minutes here. Seth Rollins showing, you know, he is the Iron Man of the WWE. Coming out at, number 10th entrant, lasting over 43 minutes to win the Royal Rumble, last eliminating Braun Strowman. Of course, another thing to add here, Nia Jax came out and attacked R-Truth and took his spot in the Royal Rumble. Nia Jax now the first ever woman to be in both the men's and women's Battle Royal on the same night.
And getting eliminations in both.
So, yes. Also, only the fourth woman to participate in the men's Royal Rumble. Of course, the other three being Chyna, Phoenix, Beth Phoenix, and Karma. So, here I thought a lot of great stories were told. A lot of different stories with all the people on the roster. And again, they had some NXT and NXT UK members. Johnny Gargano, Pete Dunne, and Aleister Black all appeared on the Royal Rumble. And of course, another surprise, Jeff Jarrett.
Double J. Yeah, that was a little strange.
Yeah, apparently Double J has gotten a contract with WWE to be a maybe a producer or some work backstage and some possible airtime as well in an undefined role. So Dixie's WWE NXT TNA takeover
is that much closer. Yeah.
Also, with the announcements that Sonya Dot and Abyss are also heading towards WWE, that takeover. It's looking, making you look like a very, very smart man for predicting this many years ago, Danny.
Well, you know, I mean, we're getting step by step a little bit closer. I really enjoyed the men's Royal Rumble. Like the women's Royal Rumble, there was a lot of fun stories to be told there, a lot of people coming and going. My favorite story at the end, towards the end, was when we actually thought that it was either going to be Andrade or Dolph Ziggler that was going to win the match, because Seth Rollins was laid on the outside, and so everybody assumed that he wouldn't be able to compete. And everybody had forgotten that Braun Strowman was still active. So it seemed like we were going to finally get, you know, it was finally going, the Royal Rumble was finally going to be something that propelled somebody from the lower or the mid card up to the championship, rather than being already kind of a top level contender guy. And so that was really fun and exciting. And then, oh yeah, Braun Strowman's still in. Oh crap! So Braun Strowman's winning. Oh well, crap. Seth Rollins is still in it, and Seth ended up winning. But a lot of the stories in there, you know, I mean, with Nia Jax, of course, coming in, and Mustafa Ali eliminating his rival Samoa Joe. You know, Drew McIntyre being eliminated by the returning Dolph Ziggler. You know, a lot of different things in there. Ambrose coming out and, you know, charging right for Seth Rollins, and Aleister Black coming in and laying waste to people was a lot of fun. Seth Rollins wins and went, you know, to the next night. He said he needed time to figure it out, but it still didn't, you know, he figured it out before the end of the night. He's going after the Beast at WrestleMania.
Brock Lesnar definitely did let Seth Rollins know what to expect, as he gave him who knows how many F5s at the end of Monday Night Raw. But yeah, the Rumble match was really fun, and a lot of people probably thought that Braun would win, especially when he was one of the last two. But Seth Rollins found a way to eliminate him and becoming the winner of the 2019 Men's Royal Rumble. So he'll be heading to WrestleMania to wrestle Brock Lesnar. So I give the show an A. I thought it was a great show, very solid. The Royal Rumble matches, loved them, loved the different names came from NXT. For most part, the rest of the card was pretty much on point. Most of the title matches were great. And this show really held up. Almost, what, 4 hours? Almost 7 hours if you include the kickoff show. And it had my attention the whole night. So that says a lot. So, yeah, so I give the Royal Rumble an A.
Yeah, I give it an A as well, because there were just – the Royal matches are always a lot of fun, a lot of mixing stories in there. You know, who's going to come out, who's coming debuting, who's returning from injury, all those kind of things. And then all the championship matches I felt were really good and really well done. But, yeah, like you said, it was a long event when you include the pre-show and the pre-show matches. But everything was really, really entertaining, and I enjoyed the show overall.
Yeah. Now, before we do close out the show, though, I do want to bring up a couple of things here that I did say I want to talk about. First, I want to take a quick look at the MMA fighters that became pro wrestlers. You have Matt Riddle, Ronda Rousey, Shayna Baszler, and Tom Lawler as just four of the people that are mainstream, get the most notoriety there, are popular. You see them transition to pro wrestling, and they've had very successful transitions. I mean, people can also credit back to, go back to King Shamrock and Dan Severn as two of the originals to make that transition. Boy, you look at him now, moving over from MMA to pro wrestling. It's very different, right? To be a wrestler than a fighter, you got to be able to learn how to, you know, quote unquote fake fight.
Yeah, and then you have to have the charisma, the personality, and you have to be able to tell stories. I think there's a lot more to it than just literally, you know, learning to pull your punches, basically.
And not only that, but selling other people's offense when they're not actually hurting you, but you showing the intensity of how much something does hurt. And boy, I think those four, I mean, have blown people away. And I really think that's not always an easy transition, but I'm really happy to see how some of these MMA fighters have been able to transition. But you also look at the other side where you have pro wrestlers who decide to try out this MMA stuff. And as CM Punk has shown, not everybody's so successful. But Brock Lesnar made a very successful transition, as he has always been one of the biggest draws in MMA, including winning a UFC championship. And we've seen Batista and Bobby Lashley both have successful MMA runs. And now we've seen the artist formerly known as Jack Swagger make his MMA debut, successful debut, by winning his first MMA fight by submission, and to your disappointment, not an ankle lock.
Yeah, I was disappointed that he didn't just pull out the ankle lock and snap his ankle. Yeah,
maybe next time. It was his first fight. You know, he needed to get the jitters out, get his feel for what to expect. But yes, some of these wrestlers having better. I think that to be successful in MMA, you definitely need to be athletic, and not only that, maybe like have athletic experience, being an athlete, which I think CM Punk did not.
Yeah, and he admittedly said, like, you know, he didn't really play a lot of sports growing up. He's never really been like, he's always been on the entertainment side more so than an athlete side. But you have somebody like, you know, like Brock Lesnar, of course, who went through wrestling in, you know, who was a top level wrestler in high school and college. You know, Lashley, of course, was a top level athlete as well. And Jack Swagger as well. you know, being a top of collegiate athlete. So they grew up under the kind of grueling athletic, you know, training regimens you have to use to put yourself in to be successful in mixed martial arts, where CM Punk was not only still trying to learn the skills of jiu-jitsu, but also now having to train himself to be this type of top level athlete at a later age in life than most people start at. So he already was kind of behind the eight ball in a lot of positions. You know, the guy he fought in his first fight, you know, was only 20 years old, but had already probably been doing MMA a lot longer than Punk had been. Probably been studying jiu-jitsu a lot longer than Punk had been. So it's and I mean, there's probably countless MMA guys who try into wrestling that we don't hear about because they do it so terribly. You know, like they do maybe a couple indie shows, or they go to a training school for a little while, and then they just kind of flop, you know. So there's probably also fail stories there too. Punk's, of course, just being the most high profile because he went from being one of the highest profile in wrestling, and then they used that to market his UFC fights. But his UFC career, unfortunately, his he's probably earned a lot of money doing it, but it has not been successful for him as far as victories.
And your overall thoughts here on the MMA fighters that made the transition to pro wrestling?
Well, the ones that have done it successfully have done, you know, I mean, Ronda Rousey, Shayna Baszler, Matt Riddle, you know, and Tom Lawler to some extent is, you know, he's working his way through the independents still. While he's currently doing both, he hasn't left MMA to do professional wrestling. He's kind of going back and forth, kind of similar to how, you know, Bob Sapp and Josh Barnett did. When it's done well, you know, as Shayna Baszler has shown us, as Ronda Rousey is showing us, as Matt Riddle is showing us, you can do it. It can be done well, and adds a different dimension to professional wrestling. You know, Brock Lesnar, you know, changed up the way he wrestles since coming back to WWE. You know, so you can do it well, and I think it adds a different dimension to it because, you know, back in the day, you know, I mean, even the 60s and 70s and into the 80s, the big thing was for former professional football players to come and, you know, oh, he played college football. He was a great college football player. So now he's coming into wrestling. You know, that used to be kind of the big thing, you know, and say these guys are legitimate athletes and, you know, they had success elsewhere. They're coming here. I think now it's mixed martial arts, and you know, we're seeing that so many guys and girls can do it well and make a transition from being purely an athlete to being an athlete entertainer, and have success. So there is a lot of different transitions, but I think, you know, people are showing that it can be done, and it can add new and exciting elements to professional wrestling.
Yeah, definitely. I have been blown away by the way that they've been able to do so. Some of them at a much shorter period of time than others, but yes, great transition. And now we're seeing, you know, the other two horsewomen, in Jasmine Duke and Marina Shafir, getting ready, continuing to develop, and not at the level of Rousey and Baszler.
No, they haven't been trying it as long. They haven't been trying it as long, for starters. But they're working to see if they could be successful at it as well, yeah.
But that's the great thing is, like, how we're talking about, it's like this four horsewomen versus four horsewomen thing doesn't have to happen right away. They can take their time and also give Duke and Shafir the time that they need to develop, to get to where they need to be. So, yeah. Great. Look forward to seeing who else makes the transition either to or from pro wrestling and MMA. And lastly, the exits that we kind of been talking about, it's been all over social media that Dean Ambrose turned down a 5-year, 7-figure extension and will be leaving WWE in April, most likely after WrestleMania. WWE as well tweeted out that Jonathan Good, of course, Dean Ambrose, will not be renewing with the company, will be leaving in April. So WWE doesn't really acknowledge these things. So I know people are a little bit.
Yeah, I'm kind of skeptical. Yeah, I'm skeptical about it because of that. Yeah, I think it's going to, and whether find it or not, I think they can play it into a story similar to how they did with CM Punk. You know, oh, he hasn't resigned yet. He's got this WWE Championship match. He hasn't resigned yet, you know, and then he quote unquote won the championship and left, you know, but he hadn't signed. I think they could do something like that. Like, I think there's more to it because it is odd that a few months prior, they're just like, oh yeah, he's not coming back. So like, you know, I think they could play it as a good story that he's like, oh yeah, I don't give a crap anymore. Cause you know, I'm going to be out of here anyways.
Yeah. See, and after what happened with the New Japan New Beginning shows in the US and your intuition about that, I'm going to believe you. I'm going to trust your judgment here. There could be more to it. That really doesn't announce when talent is leaving. And it could be that they decided to announce it because it came out and everybody announced it.
Yeah. Yeah. The dirt sheets were blowing it up. They want to kind of confirm or deny it. Yeah.
But it's kind of hard to really know the truth until, like you said, it actually happens. So if he stays, great. If he decides to leave, great. You know, whatever will make him the happiest. I know that I don't just speak for myself, but as we wish every human being out there to do what makes them happy. And if somebody wants to take a break from the Fed and do something else, does not mean they're not good enough. Does not mean that they can go out and do something else better. They just want to try something else out. Everybody has the freedom to do whatever they want. And Dean Ambrose has the same rights. And, you know, whatever life takes him, as long as he's a happy man, hey, great for him. Now, whether or not this will work or not, we'll find out in April. But, yeah, if he does leave the league, I think he'll definitely be a great loss there. Now the other one that was coming out late last night was Hideo Itami, and saying that he had asked for and had been granted his release from WWE. Now if this is true and he has a 3-month clause, a non-compete, then that means that people definitely will not see him WrestleMania weekend this April. But he posted on his Twitter, thank you, and no, his profile name, yeah, to Kenta, right? So his profile name got changed to Kenta.
All day long, people, other WWE superstars have been saying thank you, Kenta, no thank you, and I respect you, and these kind of things. So he's had a difficult transition. Now, he's the only one of the original NXT 5 to not hold championship gold in WWE. The other NXT 5, of course, being Kevin Owens, Finn Balor, Sami Zayn, and Adrian Neville. All the other four being NXT champions, three of those four winning championship gold on the main roster. But Hideo Itami just never really connected. I felt that he was brought into a lot of a lot of fanfare. But beyond his initial feud with the Ascension and teaming with Finn, him bringing in Finn Balor to help him, I felt he struggled a lot to just kind of connect with the audience. It seemed he struggled to adjust his style to WWE. I think there was also personally with him, having moved his wife and his two young children I think there was a lot of just cultural differences and moving to Florida, you know, and having to essentially go back to the bottom where he had been a top star in Japan for so many years. And then he got injured, and then he got injured again. And so then once he came back, they moved him to 205, and he had kind of this new heel attitude, the, you know, you will respect me kind of thing, I thought was really working for him. I felt that he was firing really well, as far as on all cylinders of his in-ring work, had finally adjusted. You know, and they recently paired him with Arya Daivari to kind of be the mouthpiece for him, so that today with Tommy didn't have to talk, he'd kind of be the silent killer. You know, speak ominously, a little bit in English, a little bit in Japanese, but Arya was carrying the words for him. But I guess, you know, once, you know, he just had kind of the moderate, you know, didn't really have the success in NXT he would have liked. And he was living in Florida. Now he's on the road and he's still not kind of getting that success he wants. And then he, you know, WWE allowed him to go back to Japan for the one match in Noah to face Naomichi Marufuji in Marufuji's 20th anniversary show. I think that probably kind of was the linchpin for him. Like, I can go back and I could be a top star here again. I could go back and I could be with my, you know, the rest of my family again and go back to a culture that knows me. You know, so I think there's probably a lot of things, and it's probably just overall, like, there's probably been a lot of good in it, but I think it's probably been a frustrating experience. It hasn't been what he wanted it to be, what everybody who had been Kenta fans hoped it would be. So I assume he's moving back to Japan. You know, we haven't heard anything, but I assume he'd be moving back to Japan, more than likely going back to Pro Wrestling Noah. I don't know if there's a 90-day compete clause or not, but I assume that people are trying to reach out and talk to him about coming back to the States for WrestleMania week. You know, hopefully I get a chance to see him live, again, at some capacity, here in the United States, preferably. I don't intend to go to Japan anytime soon, unfortunately. But coincidentally, the same day that Hideo Itami does his last match in the U.S. is also the last match that Kushida does for New Japan Pro Wrestling. As he said earlier after the New Japan press conference and the New Year's Dash press conference, that he would be leaving New Japan. He wanted to. His dream was to travel the world. I assume that meant coming to World Wrestling Entertainment. Rumors spread that he'd be coming to WWE, be coming right to 205 Live. He would bypass NXT. So hopefully Kushida is able to have success where Hideo Itami struggled. I think the difference between like Hideo Itami and Nakamura, Nakamura is larger, so he's technically a heavyweight. But Nakamura has the unmatched charisma that even if you don't understand, you know, some of what he's doing, it's you kind of do and you're interested. Hideo Itami being a smaller guy, struggling and not really having the high-flying acumen that a lot of the smaller guys do that helped get them over, even if people don't really know what their character is. So maybe Kushida, with being a bit more diverse as far as being able to high fly some and being able to grapple more, as well as, you know, not just relying on heavier strikes. Possibly Kushida has a little bit more success, hopefully so, as I'm also a really, really big fan of Kushida. But I just found it oddly coincidental that they're both kind of having their exits and passing as you know, passing each other on the way as they transition from Japan to the U.S.
Yeah, now with the former Kenta, well, I guess not former Hideo Itami, maybe the move wasn't really the best for him overall. Will he go back to Noah? Noah just announced they're under new ownership, so a lot of things are going to be changing in Noah. Could he potentially look at going to New Japan Pro Wrestling? Well, they definitely need the star power. That could be a great addition for him. As far as to where does Kushida go, the rumors have been the Fed, but, you know, anything could happen at this point. Until something does happen, we're not sure. But as far as Hideo Itami, I think that maybe things never clicked the way they're supposed to, but the time that he was at the Fed, he made the most out of it, and he performed great. And not this one, not announced by the Fed at all, not acknowledged that he was leaving. And he's, you know, actually, you know, he's supposedly done.
He's done. He did his last date. Yeah. He took the pinfall at the Royal Rumble on Tuesday. He lost in a, you know, contenders type match to Akira Tozawa. And then his former manager, Arya Daivari, basically turns on him and lays him out. So on the way out, he put over the Cruiserweight champion. He put over the next contender, and he essentially helped establish somebody who could be a future contender. So he did, you know, he did the good brother moves in his last couple outings. And then, yeah, it was pretty much after that, you know, after 205 Live, that was all he was done, and he's done. And he started, you know, he closed, pretty much started saying, you know, I'm gone. And people and everybody else was superstars confirming it. So, yeah, odd that WWE would announce Dean Ambrose's, you know, not re-signing two plus months before his last date. And now Hideo Itami is actually done. They're just going to kind of, they haven't really acknowledged it yet. So I don't know if they will. But it's just odd of what they're acknowledging and pushing and what they're not.
Yeah, so it's going to be very interesting to see what happens here. You announce one guy who's not leaving yet, but you don't announce the guy who's leaving. Right. So it's going to be very interesting to see what really happens. To find out, though, everybody stay tuned. And, of course, we'll definitely be talking about it here on the Fans of Wrestling show. Thank you all for listening to this week's episode. Of course, you can find this and every single episode on the FOW Radio Network. You can subscribe on iTunes, TuneIn, Stitcher, Podbean, and Google Play. You can also follow us on the social media machine at FOW Radio is where we are at. Danny's on Twitter at Danny F in Danger. I'm on Twitter at YellowmanPA. Once again, thanks for listening. And as always, keep watching wrestling.